contains the uncensored ramblings of two geeks before being geeks was cool. Therefore, listener discretion is advised.
Loading Geek 1. Loading Geek 2. Synchronizing Geeks.
By 2 version 2.0, the show that still takes three topics and throws them at two geeks. I'm Laz D, the pseudo Kiwi, coming to you as always from 3x2 Studios, Virginia.
And I am the illustrious Patrick M, coming to you from 3x2 Studios, Ohio. Well, summer is not yet here. Spring seems to have left, and hopefully by the time we get this podcast posted, it'll be warm again, because I think it got cold literally before the beginning of our recording, because we recorded an interview this week in the middle of the week, and it was freezing, and it hasn't yet warmed up here, and it's depressing and sad, and I want it warm so that I can edit naked. You didn't need to know that, did you?
No, I did not.
Nobody need to know that. Damn!
What I do need to know is what this episode is about.
I don't care. We'll figure that out right after we get to the news. Today in the news, we have a great announcement, another addition to the 3x2 family. No, nobody squeezed any ass spawn out this time.
No, I would say hopefully not. Yes, actually, we have a new member of our team. Welcome to Alex Napier, who is not in this episode because we just didn't want him in this episode. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Because it's our episode. It's our special one. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, that was bad. Anyway, tell us what he's going to be doing on the website.
Well, actually, even at the time of this recording, he's actually already started to get into it earnestly. He's been posting video game reviews at the moment, and we're kind of working on fleshing out the website just to give him a little bit more room to grow and to breathe, because he's been pretty enthusiastic about adding more content, which is fantastic.
Because we need more content, among other things.
Yeah, we need lots more content.
Yeah, especially since we could keep getting distracted on these podcasts because real life tends to suck a little too much at times.
Yes. Yes,
but
it can.
Once you get the baby thing under control, and now that you're graduated, and now that it's getting warm enough that I can get the windows open, get the kids outside, and get the naked time. Damn it! I keep going there. Screw it. Either way, we'll bring him on a future podcast when we get something where he's more of an expert than even we are, which is hard to do because I'm an expert in everything. So, anyway, that's the news.
All right. So thanks, everybody, for joining the show tonight. We have a very special guest, our second guest from Star Trek Axanar, Mr. Alec Peters, who is the executive producer, the man, I guess, propping up the production and also starring as Garth of Izar. Thank you very much, Alec, for joining the show with us tonight.
My pleasure to be here.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about three aspects of the Axanar, and primarily we're going to focus on Prelude to Axanar since you just wrapped up filming on that. And we're going to start off with, we want to get to know a little bit about yourself. You know, there's a lot of, I guess, public information about your history with Trek, but we'd like to share a personal, I guess, a personal profile of our guests with our listeners and such. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into doing Trek as a film project?
Well, I wrote my first story about Garth of Izar about 20 years ago. And it was, I still have that. And it's pretty awful. But I've always been fascinated with the character. And if you ask me why, I'll say that, geez, just watch the end of that episode. And it's, there is something really special about about Garth when he comes out of his insanity and the haze clears and you start to see who this captain was. I always wanted to know who he was and what was his story and what was the Battle of Axanar and why was he Kirk's hero? These are important questions that were never answered in Star Trek. And so, and being a collector of Star Trek screen used props and costumes since 2006 when I attended the Christie's auction, a few years ago, I got in, I guess it was in early 2010, I got Garth of Izar, Steve Inhat's, the actor's original costume from that episode.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, which was one of my holy grails, and I was so excited to get it. And I will say it fits perfectly.
Wow, that's nice.
And so I was talking to James Cawley, who you know is the head of Star Trek Phase 2.
Yes.
Who's, you know, the longest running Star Trek fan film. They've been around 10 years, and of which I'm now a producer of.
Nice.
James, and I've always gone to James because he had worked for Bill Tice, the original costume designer on Star Trek. And we were just talking about Star Trek, and I said, oh, by the way, James, I got the original costume from Garth of Izar, and he said, that's so amazing, and we started talking about Garth and what a great character. And he said, you know, we are shooting, this is 2010, he said, we are shooting this episode called Origins, which is about young Kirk at the Academy. And it would be really cool to put Garth in that episode because that's about the time that Garth was, you know, at his height. And I said, oh, my God, that would be cool. You absolutely should do that. And he said, well, you need to come play him.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, that's very generous of you, James. So, sure. And so I did, and that clip is available on our website, StarTrekAxanar.com. And it's a very funny clip where and this Admiral, Rob Withrow, who plays the Admiral in all the Phase 2 episodes, are overlooking the Kobayashi Maru simulator, watching young Kirk blow it up. And the Admiral just is like, oh, this Kirk kid, he's just, you know, George Kirk's kid is just a disaster and he's going to wash out. And then there's this big explosion and Garth says, oh, I like this kid. You know, it's kind of fun and it's instructive and illuminates the characters a little. And that was it. It was two lines. I literally had two lines. And then about 2 years ago, James called and said, hey, he said, why don't you come back? We're doing this vignette that's going to introduce Brian Gross as the new Captain Kirk.
Nice.
Why don't you come back and play a recovered Captain Garth in this vignette? It's placed like in year 4 of TOS. I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. I'll do it. And I did that. And I went and did that. And that was fun. And the first time I was there in 2010, James and I went out to lunch. And I told him about I wanted to write a Garth story. He said, you need to write a script. And he says, write a script and maybe we'll film it. So, wow. So I'm a pretty good writer, but not a screenwriter. So I took Robert McKee's story seminar. If anyone who's a screenwriter knows Robert McKee, the godfather of screenwriter, so to speak. And I took his 4-day course with John Kelly, who's Dr. McCoy in Phase 2. And it was amazing. And it was illustrious. It was just an amazing experience, and it really helped educate me about what writing a screenplay was all about. And right after that, bam, started writing the Axanar screenplay. And that's kind of how it got started. And I had a treatment to start, and the treatment I showed to Marco Palmieri, who used to be the head of Pocketbook, the editor-in-chief of Star Trek for Pocketbooks.
Okay.
Up until a few years ago. And I contacted him on Facebook. I said, I'm writing, can you read this treatment? And he read it, and he gave me some great feedback. And that led me to start writing the script. And we finished the script last year. And we just finished wrapping Prelude to Axanar, the short story that is going to be the prequel.
Well, it's amazing that this story, I mean, it's basically, it's probably going to be, if not the, it will be one of the, I guess, closest introspective looks that we see of the character of Garth of Izar. And when I first heard about the Axanar project, it was purely by accident. And I thought, my goodness, you know, my experience with Star Trek fan films had been limited mostly to seeing a little bit of Star Trek New Voyages before it became Phase 2, and also the Tim Russ helmed project Star Trek of Gods and Men. So I thought to myself, okay, you know, we've got some people out there who are very passionate about the franchise. They want to see Gene's vision continue to be realized. Instead of seeing it continued on in the reboot universe solely, they wanted to see their own spin on it. And well, that's really you know, sort of a neat idea. And then I saw the project for Star Trek Axanar, and I'm not going to lie, I was enamored immediately because, you know, growing up, you know, Patrick and I are old school tabletop gamers. So, you know, we did the Star Trek thing, and of course, we were always going on about different source materials that the game companies were putting out, and, you know, Axanar and the 4 Years War with the Klingons was always this, it was always a sort of, I guess, mystical or a little myth about Starfleet's history, and it was just a missing chapter. And when I saw that somebody was actually doing a film about that period, especially the whole you know, situation where we had the Battle of Axanar, I have to know more about this. I have to be behind this. And then you know, since then, we have followed it very, very closely and have been backers of the Kickstarter campaign for Prelude to Axanar. You know, and it wasn't just so much that you had a Star Trek story, it wasn't even so much that you had some really good meat behind it, with, you know, especially with the CG coming in from Tobias Richter. That man's name is getting bounced around in every interview, every circle that has to do with these fan films. But also the fact is that the story was so good that you were attracting the likes of Richard Hatch, Gary Graham, Michael Hogan, Kate Vernon, Tony Todd, you know, amazing, just amazing sort of experience. I was like, you know, we got to get behind this. You know, I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know when they're going to do this, but we got to get behind it.
And that brings us to the Kickstarter, because really, once you had everything written, then you were ready to go to the Kickstarter. So if you can tell us about how that exploded to 10 times its funding levels.
Well, you know, there's kind of a formula that you need to follow if you want to make money on Kickstarter. Part of it is having a great project, and that certainly involves, if you're doing a Star Trek fan film, that certainly involves having a great cast, because that's how Renegades raised $374,000. Had a cast that everyone knew who they were. And they did that little video that was very you know, with Tim Russ and Walter reprising their roles, that little teaser trailer. And so that kind of legitimacy is important right off the bat. So I knew we needed that. I knew we needed a cast, and I built the cast based around the script. Richard Hatchett was my first acting coach 20 years ago, and he's a very good friend of mine, and I approached him a year and a half ago to play Karn. And boy, am I ever happy I did, for so many reasons. But if you just look at the photo, the first photo that we put up, the green screen photo of him, fudge, he looks amazing. And everyone's, we just had our first post-production meeting, and the guys are just telling me that his stuff was out of this world. So yeah, so that's going around and casting it is important. And then we got J.G. Hertzler, and I wanted J.G. to play a star captain. And then we just, you know, it was it went on from there. And then we were, you know, got lucky with Kate Vernon, Tony Todd was, you know, our last one we got, and that was, you know, we couldn't be happier.
It's kind of, I won't say ironic, but it's kind of interesting to have one of Star Trek's most famous Klingons playing a Starfleet captain. You know, obviously, most everybody who's listening just knows that J.G. Hertzler played General Martok, later Chancellor Martok on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And, you know, again, it seems like you guys really had a good formula, because when we first saw the project, you know, we looked at it and said, okay, $10,000. Yeah, I'm pretty sure these guys are going to hit $10,000 for their, for their production. And I think you guys, I know you guys were probably expecting to go a bit beyond it. You know, you're already planning your stretch goals just in case. But the word we keep using when it comes to this project or this Kickstarter campaign was gangbusters. We just watched it going up and up and up.
Yeah, and that was absolutely the plan. You know, it's interesting. The one constant about Axanar is it keeps getting bigger in scope and keeps getting more professional, and we keep getting more ape Hollywood players involved. And so, you know, originally we're like, I had said, oh, we can do this for 20 grand. We asked for 10 because I'm like, if I get 10, you know, Tobias said he would, you know, wait a little while for the money for the special effects. And I knew I could throw on some of my own money. I was like, oh, we could do it. But we hit 20. I mean, we hit 10, you know, we hit $10,000 in 7 hours. And then we hit 15 in a day, and or a day and a half. It was a day. And then a day and a half later, we had 20. And, you know, we were like, oh, all right, we got, that's pretty good. And then we're like, okay, well, we're really going to need 30, because once you take out all the fees and everything and, you know, whatever. And we started really figuring out the numbers, and our budget rapidly grew to $40,000 for a prelude. But that's not, you know, when you get down to it, and ultimately we just, you know, our final budget for prelude will be about $65,000.
Okay.
And the reason it will be $65,000 is because when you walked on the set those 2 days, you thought you were on a professional Hollywood movie set. There was nothing fanciful about this. J.G. Hertzler said it was the most impressive independent film he'd ever been on. And I told Richard Hatch last night at dinner, Richard was like, independent? He said, that's as good as any set I've ever been on in my life. And so what's happened is this film that we were claiming, look, we're not making a fan film. We're going to really try and make a professional Star Trek film. We've been claiming that. Now we've actually done it. And the dailies are insane. And when people see it, they will go, oh, they made that for only $65,000? Because it, now the bad news is it's so impressive that we now have to do the same for Axanar, which will be a 2 week or 2 or 3 week shoot. So it bumps up our budget and everything, but no one is going to argue with the final. Everyone's going to be, I keep saying blown away. Everyone will be blown away. I'm being blown away. Let me tell you, being on that set and watching Gary Graham say lines that I wrote and say them as Saval, it was mind-boggling. It was so awesome, and it sent chills up everyone's spine. And that's Gary, and that's Gary Graham. He's just one of six amazing actors we had. Five amazing actors plus me. you know, and Tony Todd, oh God, when you see Tony Todd, you're going to want to pick up your phaser and go fight Klingon. I mean, he's amazing. And Kate Vernon looks, oh, she looks spectacular. And you know, I am going to pat Christian and myself on the backs for casting her. You know, we cast her as this hard-nosed, Patton-esque Starfleet captain. And she was afraid she wouldn't bring, you know, we had long conversations about this character, and she was it wasn't like anything she played, and she just nailed it. And oh God, I'm just telling you, it was the two most magical days of filming I've ever done.
I can only imagine. I mean, I've just finished film school myself, and knowing, you know, that when you spend time on set doing these things and seeing your work come to life, at first you're so daunted by the project, you just don't know how you're going to do it or whether or not you're going to be able to pull it off. And then slowly as these pieces start falling into place, you start seeing your vision become realized, and you're actually humbled. You're humbled to see these things. And as you were saying, you were talking about Gary reading the lines that you wrote as Saval. Well, you know, as I said to Gary, Saval was my favorite character from Enterprise. My wife and I are very big fans of the Vulcan culture from Star Trek. So being able to talk to this man and be able to share his insight, not only on the project, but also on the character, was – it was something that I think if I died at that moment, I would have been happy to do so. And now, you know, we get to see, we'll be able to see him carry on that. And not only are we seeing, and you said, you mentioned, you know, how powerful a performance that Kate Vernon gave you, you know, and we all know her as Ellen Tai from BSG. And nice. We knew as soon as we knew that she was on the project, you know, whatever role she was going to play, it was going to be fantastic. You know, again, you know, seeing J.J. Hertzler in there and knowing that I want to call him an old salty dog. You know, he reminds me of an old sea dog. He's going to be able to bring that charisma to the role, as well as, again, you know, you talked about Tony Todd and Richard Hatch. Now, Richard Hatch, you know, we all grew up with him, you know, on our television set every week in the 1970s. So again, I can imagine not only is it probably an honor and a privilege to have him as a friend, but also being able to count him as, you know, an acting coach who helped you out, but also being able to know that he's bringing all of that experience to your project, not only just the teaser, but also bringing it to the main production of Axanar. You know, I tell you, when I saw that you signed Tony Todd, you know, I don't know if anybody else got the reference, but I immediately screamed out Candyman. And I was just like, oh my goodness, that voice is just going to cut through everything. I can imagine whatever he plays is going to be amazing.
He's Admiral Ramirez. He's basically the admiral that takes over in the middle of the war as the Federation is getting their ass kicked. And so, which when I wrote the script, it's funny. I wrote that admiral to be Eric Avari, if you know who he is, who's been in everything, Stargate, and he was the tribal leader in Stargate the movie, and that carried over into the TV show, and you've seen him on a million things. Yes. And I really like, I've always loved Eric as an actor. And so I wrote it for him. And then we got, we met a producer who worked with Tony Todd on Sushi Girl. And he started saying, God, you should get Tony. I'm like, yeah. And I originally had him as a Starfleet captain. And then one day I was just thinking, I'm going, what the hell is Tony Todd doing being captain? He should be the admiral of Starfleet. And it totally changed that role for us. We didn't rewrite the role, but it totally changed the perception of the role. Why not have your biggest badass former captain, who's now admiral, start, and everyone turns to him because the war is going so bad, and someone that Garth could look up to, right? And so we had dinner with him. He read the script. He loved it all. And we were honored that, you know, it's a small role for such an experienced actor, and we were really honored to have him. So. I'm going to tell you the funny story about being on set with Tony Todd. He shot on Sunday. We had 2 days of shooting, Sunday and Thursday. Sunday was Tony Todd and J.J. Hertzler and Gary Graham. And Tony is a very, how should I say, serious actor. He takes his craft incredibly serious, as he should, right? And I with nothing but respect for the man. So it's Sunday, and I'm in executive producer mode on Sunday. I'm not on screen until Thursday. So I'm just, and being a good executive producer, I hired great people, and I got nothing to do on set.
Okay.
I'm in a great mood. I'm just meeting everyone. I'm just checking up on things, making sure the costumes are taken care of, because I was kind of in charge in some aspects of that. And I'm having a good time. I'm in a great mood. Tony says, you know, and Tony's in the hallway. He sees me. He says, are you nervous? I go, nervous? No, I'm not nervous. I said, I'm having a great time. This is easy. So then I go into the dressing room to see Gary Graham get up, and I'm in a good mood, and I'm joking with everyone. And you know how all of a sudden you feel a presence next to you? And I saw Tony Todd walk in the room, but I was talking to Gary, and all of a sudden I know Tony Todd is standing right next to me, and I turn around, and he's 6'5", and I'm 6 feet, so I'm looking up at him, right? And I look up at him, and he looks at me like with the most serious, stern look at, and he's looking like right, and he goes,
oh boy,
you're my best squadron commander.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm thinking, And you got on, and I laughed for a second because I'm in executive producer mode, and I'm just like, I'm just thinking, fanboy Alex is going, is this great or what? And then I'm thinking, if this all happens within like a split second, I'm going, oh, this is, oh my God, he's doing that actor shit. And I compose myself, and I look back at him and I go, meets her. And he nods, and he turns around, and he walks out.
Oh my goodness. Oh my.
And I turned around and I wanted to freaking faint. I was like, oh my God, that was, I was like, well, and it was good because I walked down in the hallway after and we're all sitting there and Tony's there, he's there, and his producer friend are there, and we're talking, and he's asking me about his uniform. He's in this beautiful uniform they're custom made. He's asking about those triangular award ribbons that you saw Kirk had in, on his, and he's like, well, what are these? And he kind of sounds like Batman. I go, they're campaign ribbon, they're award ribbon. So it might be for a campaign you fought in or an honor you received. And he goes, do they mean anything? And I said, no. I said, there's nothing. Each one does not specifically mean anything. He goes, okay, I'm going to assign things to these, which is what an actor does.
Right.
It's an actor's job to fully live and inform every aspect, the day, the time, your backstory, what you're wearing. Everything has to have a purpose and a reason in order for you to connect with the character. And so he does, you know, he's brilliant at that. And then he said, to me, oh, I was just messing with you in there. And I was like, no, I know exactly what you're doing. I said, I have an enormous amount of respect for you, Tony. And, as an actor. And I said, and that informs me as Garth on how I'm going to react to you as Admiral Ramirez when we do our scene at Tilman, at Starfleet headquarters. I said, that's my bridge that I'm building. Is my respect for you as an actor is the bridge I'm going to be building for Garth. And he kind of nodded at me. And, because he likes that shit. he wants to know that you're good. Listen, I'm the amateur actor amongst these pros. I mean, I've done acting here and there, and I've been in class for the past 2 years with some of the best coaches in Hollywood and Richard Hatch now for the past 6 months. But I'm an unproven, I definitely know that I'm the unproven guy on that set. And it was kind of fun to be pushed a little bit by Tony. And he's a great guy. He is so much fun to be with. He really, everyone loved having him on set.
Well, I can only imagine that we are going to see some amazingly fantastic things coming from not only Prelude to Axanar, but Axanar itself. I'd like to just talk a little bit about what we can expect to see. I have one question that has been burning up the back of my brain. We're going to come onto the show. And it is something that I have been obsessed with for the last 20 years. We have yet to see it in a Star Trek production. Is will we see the Marines?
Yes. Oh, okay. No. So here's my take on Marines. Okay. There's no canon reference for Marines.
Right.
We have Makos. And then in Deep Space Nine, we see ground troops. So we're wearing a different uniform, but they're never called Marines. They're Starfleet.
Right.
Marines is something definitely made up by, I'm not even sure if they're in, are they in books? I'm not even sure the reference is there, but it's certainly not a canon source. That was a very delicate subject. And my take was there aren't Marines in Starfleet because they've never been referenced. Mm. And if there was actual Marines, you would have heard something about them. But our take is that there are, you know, just like you had Makos in the Earth, in the United Aerospace Agency, right? Mm-hmm. And I know they referenced Makos in the book that was the tie-in book to Star Trek Online.
Right.
And I thought that was a total mistake because that's an Earth force. That's not a Starfleet force.
Right.
So my take was there are troops, but they aren't Marines. They're Starfleet. And they are badasses. They're SEALs because they're at war. So there's no red shirts. And literally, there are no red shirts in Axanar because there's no red shirts in the cage. There's no red shirts in Where No Man's Gone Before.
Right.
There's no, and we take place 21 years before the first season of Star Trek. So 8 years before the cage. 2245 is the year we take place. So we're saying that we have troops, and they're bad, and you're going to love them because they're all SEALs, basically.
Okay.
And because there aren't many of them on the ship, because ships aren't there to occupy territory. You will see them like you've never seen Starfleet forces before.
That's something we're looking forward to, at least myself, because I've always been, I will use the word obsessed, because I've always enjoyed the fact that Star Trek can be so diverse, and knowing that if we're going to treat the Starfleet as effectively as Earth or this great space navy, they've got to have, you know, a force to back them up, not just people who, you know, the people who man the or crew the ships. They've got to be people who have got to fight the wars, you know, and not all battles are fought in space, you know, as we know.
Absolutely.
You know, again, it was one of those things. I was so excited. Like I knew you called the, you know, you guys had come up with, you know, like, especially Terry McIntosh, had come up with the group, of supporters for Axnar as the Axnar Marines. And I was just like, I'm hoping we see something. You know,
you will not be disappointed. Yeah. We use the Axnar Marines as our street team, as you would, the guys that are promoting us. And here I'll just, you know, one, our troops have sniper rifles. You will see it in the landing party scene. They get down there and two of them take up position as overwatch over the landing party, because that's what you would do in a military setting, right?
Exactly.
You have a guy with a sniper rifle on overwatch. And there's a great scene, which I don't mind telling you about, where one of the snipers hears something behind him, and he rolls over just as a Klingon knife embeds itself where his head used to be.
Wow.
And there's a Klingon standing, you know, like, you know, 20 feet away from him. And so the guy gets up and he pulls the Klingon knife out of the rock, and then in Klingon he says to the Klingon, "I'm going to use your own knife to cut your tongue out."
That's brilliant.
And then the Klingon is like, "And I'm going to kill you for using my language." And then they go at it, and they're going to kick each other's ass, and it's going to be awesome, and it's going to be unlike anything you've seen in Star Trek before, because that's what war is, right? This is a war story set in Star Trek universe. It's not. I told David Gerald this when he read the script. I said, "David, it's not a Star Trek story. It's a war story set in the Star Trek universe." And he was like, "I love war stories. This will be great." So
beautiful. That's exactly what this franchise has missed for so long. We had, you know, a little bit of the war, the Dominion War in Deep Space Nine, but we never really saw what happens to the Federation when they really get into a scrap. You know, I know that we're going to be looking at later on, there's another project online that's out there for Star Trek Horizons that'll be taking place during the
Romulan War. Great. Listen, Tom is a good friend of mine. We've really bonded over the past few months. He is working on Axanar, and I love his stuff, and Horizon is the bomb.
Well, I tell you, and so we've got that coming up, and we also have, again, we have Axanar coming out, and that gives two wonderful, introspective looks at what it is like for a galactic coalition to face, you know, almost near extinction from these outside forces. You know, again, with the Horizon, we have the Romulan War, which, you know, from what we know of the Romulan War, the Romulans kicked Earth's ass up until a couple of really fortunate events turned the tide for them. And the same thing with the 4 Years War, the Klingons being so efficient at killing and so efficient at war that Earth really had very little chance of winning. It wasn't until the fact that we have some fantastic characters like Garth of Izar being able to pull these strategies out to help countermand the whole threat of that. So, you know, not only
we lay that out, and we lay that out for you. So that's what Prelude to Axanar is about. It is about what happened in the war. You know, the beginnings of the war, the bad times for the Federation, how they turned it around, everything up to the Battle of Axanar. So we will leave it off before the Battle of Axanar, And that's, hey, that's what you call a cliffhanger. That's and you will come back to see, you know, what happened. But we really lay the case out for you. And that was why we, you know, the whole idea was we needed something to prove that we were great filmmakers. And we needed to do something. And my idea was, let's make a History Channel special about the Four-Year War. Because I'm a Fast fan, too. I never played the game, but I bought all the books, right?
Yeah.
And I read them all. And that's how I learned a little more about Garth. And so you'll see a lot of nods to FASA, you know, the planets. Mm. You know, I don't know if it'll make it into Prelude or not, but there'll certainly be an excerpt. There's I did an improv on camera, and because there's a line about we all remember when they named Admiral Ramirez, right? Because this is a big turning point. It's kind of not really, but if you remember, like in Starship Troopers, where they appoint a new Sky Marshal, right?
Right.
So here it is, and they appoint Admiral Ramirez, and so Garth says, "We all remember when they named Admiral Ramirez." Well, as an actor, you have got to fill that sentence in your mind. You have to remember when it was Admiral. What was it like? And I did this improv for Christian that he let me do on camera too, and I said. We all remember when it was Admiral Ramirez. I was on the bridge of Xenophon, my first command in the war. It was an old Markland class destroyer. And I go on from there. And but I did that because I'm a FASA fan, and I wanted that nod to FASA.
That's fantastic. Just a little bit of trivia. FASA Star Trek was the first role-playing game I ever purchased. I still have the deluxe version, which has the officer's manual, the game master, the game operations manual. I have the Romulan way. So the Romulans source book, the Orions, the Klingons, the Axanar source book. It's just, To hear you mention that you're going to put a nod to those things is just kind of it's giving me, you know, not to be too over dramatic, but it is giving me goosebumps right now, because I cannot believe that we're going to be seeing all these things that we thought were echoes of the past coming back in such a way that we can quantify them and enjoy them again. We could probably talk for hours, and we won't do that to you. But what we do want, you know, we are looking very much forward to seeing Prelude to Axanar, and of course later on Star Trek Axanar. Can you let us know when you're looking to actually have Prelude out and available?
You know, we had actually hoped to have it out by the end of the month because we're going to FedCon, but there's no way that's going to happen just because this project has gotten so big. When your budget balloons, you know, to $65,000 for all the right reasons, and you get the quality of people. I mean, we got one of the top visual effects supervisors in Hollywood jumped on board, a couple of weeks before we start shooting. We got these great people, and now no one wants to rush it. We got to do this right. This is because the dailies came in and they're amazing. And everyone's like, okay, and we need to do this right. We need a composite right. We need the right backgrounds. So the goal is to have it released and premiered at San Diego Comic-Con. We've pitched for a panel, and we're hoping to get that panel. And middle of July. Right now we're putting together a special kind of preview of Prelude for FedCon in Germany.
Okay.
Because we're going over there and we're doing panels there. So they will see something special first. Them and our donors will see it first.
Nice.
Our donors see everything before anyone else, because that's why you donated. And that preview, once it's shown at FedCon and shown to our donors, we'll release that probably in the middle of June. And then a month later, we'll have the full trailer to Axanar, and hold on to your seats, because it's going to be amazing.
Excellent.
Well, thank you, Alec. Again, we could probably talk for hours on this, but thank you so much for your time. We're excited to see Prelude to Axanar when it comes out, and of course Star Trek Axanar. Everybody, please visit the project website at StarTrekAxanar.com. Also follow there's a Twitter feed, and there's also a Facebook page for the project. So make sure that you follow this project closely, because I know that it is going to be a pinnacle of Star Trek history.
Thank you so much. And we will not let you down.
Thanks again, Alec.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for this episode. This has been 3x2. I'm Lies D, the pseudo Kiwi.
And I am the illustrious Patrick M.
Be sure to check us out on our Twitter feed at 3x2 Studios, on our website at 3x2cast.com, and be sure to check out our Facebook fan page, even though it's only populated from our website. Yay!
Yeah, why even go there? I mean, follow us on Twitter and follow us that way. Death to Facebook, because one of my children discovered Farmville 2, and that sucks even more than life itself. So, death to Facebook, and we're out!
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License.